Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
And that's it.
Just us.
It's been a while. Show.
Yeah.
As always, this is our podcast about anything and everything off-road. We are going to kind of go all over the place tonight. Still socially distanced. Ross is still in the Northeast. I'm still in the Midwest. Where do you want to start?
It's snowing. Well, not here, but very close here. It's snowing.
It snowed here last night.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah,
it did. Shit.
Now it's the perfect early snow because it snowed, trees look pretty, yard looked pretty. Mm. Actually, it was the kind of snow that was heavy and wet, and there was still enough leaves and branches on the trees that, like, underneath the trees, there was nothing.
Death and snow, so, like, as they say. Yeah.
What was it?
Death snow. It's like maximum slippery.
Yeah.
Because leaves and
every roadway was completely clear because they were so warm. So I didn't have to shovel anything. That's why I was like, it's the best snow ever.
So it's the kind of snow that would have been super pretty if it was like Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Which but is because it's literally only a week 10 away.
10 days away. Yeah. Okay.
Not even.
Yeah, no.
Nine. As we're down to nine, but it's Tuesday. It's
Tuesday. Yeah. So lots of places go. It's been a long time since we did a show, just the two of us, and we'll take happily the mojo from TST and do crew show. Yeah. I like running with that.
I think we should start with, since you're talking about snow, I think we should start with visibility.
Yeah. With visibility, yes. Excellent segue. As you can tell, we've been doing this for a little while. So Lightforce was extremely kind and sent over some Genesis LED lights to put on the Project GX460. And after much fiasco, they have finally been wired thanks to the custom shop down in Queens. And needless to say, the visibility that these lights provide is nothing short of the difference between daytime and nighttime. And with the lights on, it is daytime. So Chris,
what you're seeing right now are just the GX's headlights.
Just the low beams, which in all fairness are pitched a little bit high because it's lifted and I have not adjusted the low beams much to any oncoming traffic this May. That is on the list of things to do in the coming weeks. But and now you can see what happens.
So for the audio listener, like half of the image was illuminated in white light for the low beams. And when you turn his light forces on, literally, you can see everything down the road.
It is remarkable. It is a full football's field worth of, like, full visibility.
It goes so far.
It's incredible. And, you know, I threw Hella 500s on the front of the truck when we did the bumper, the Iron Man lift and the Iron Man bumper. Like, a set of Hella 500s are, like, the standard. They are the go-to cheap auxiliary lights. You can get them on Amazon for like $75, which I did, and I got them on sale for like $50. So, you know, the light forces aren't cheap. The kit is about $1,000 for the two of them with the wiring and whatnot, but it is like the catch is that visibility, whether it is back roads and there's on, you know, like questionable conditions, or you're off-roading at night, they're like, you can't get around the fact that visibility is paramount to safety. And the light forces are just like phenomenal. It is, I've run so many different auxiliary lights over the dozens of vehicles I've owned. And, you know, our Australian friends always talk about light forces, and you always hear about people here running light forces, and everybody's seen pictures of them because they are unmistakable. And, on the front of the Lexus, it is just, it's a game changer. It's a total game changer. I love them. I can't say enough good about them.
And I like that they're yellow. Like,
well, they have a yellow filter, so they send them over with a clear lens, with a clear filter, or clear, you know, clip-on lens. I put the yellow lens, which they also thankfully, for my sake, sent over. I put those on because they're better for like fog, dust, and inclement weather, which realistically is the instances in which it's most vital to have improved visibility.
Did I share the snow picture on the last show?
I don't know. I don't know if you did.
Okay, I'm trying to get it to load real fast.
Was that Mac?
Yeah.
Okay, so Mac's not somebody who's new to needing visibility. So
right, and so like this was in the van.
Yes,
but this was just standard headlights, and like I would have loved some yellow light to be able to throw through the snow there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is my son taking the picture over my shoulder while I was driving. I didn't take this picture magically from the backseat, guys. I'm not that good.
Good visibility is something you totally take for granted. And as somebody who, again, has run many, many different auxiliary lights, like what these lights do in comparison to what everybody over the last 10 years has said they do is like, man, the hype is worth it. You know,
it's real is what you're saying.
the hype is real. Yeah. The hype is real. And I'm not just saying this as like some bullshitter who's trying to like say, yes, thank you, Light Force. I appreciate you sending it over. Like it's real. The lights are amazing. And you'd have to spend twice as much to get something as good. So
nice.
Yeah.
Approved. So what happens when you get out of the truck and you can't see?
Ah, yes. more unintentionally shameless plugs. I think we talked about this on the last show.
You did briefly talk about it.
Yeah. So I had been working with Pelican for some stories for UTV Driver. They sent me a cooler and a cargo box, which I'm using for like tool storage and the cooler for beer storage. Basically what they're trying to do with the cooler is just compete with Yeti. And, you know, Pelican is like the go-to name for what everybody uses for like transporting their cameras and camera gear when they have to fly. So they're expanding, they're trying to broaden their scope, and they're getting into like the tactical flashlight and lighting scene. And they sent me a flashlight, and I think it's the 8060, which may or may not be in production. I've had difficulty actually finding if it's still available or not, but it's an LED flashlight. It's like maglite size, and it's an LED. It's a rechargeable LED flashlight, which is really the crucial aspect, because my LED maglite likes to go through many, many, many batteries. And the Pelican is just, you know, you pop it on, it has a recharging apparatus, and it's like the Light Force equivalent. So the picture here is my backyard. That's the corner of my backyard where my leaves like to collect. and we have severe light pollution because, you know, city. And the next picture is what happens when the flashlight is on, and it is daytime. Like really, truly, like
that's a lot of light from the size of flashlight you showed us last time. Man. Like it's like what, 8 to 10 inches long?
It is probably about 10 inches. Yeah, probably thereabouts. It's phenomenal.
And it's rechargeable.
I mean, flat, you know, everybody in the off-road world likes flashlights, and you know, there was a long period of time when like having a maglite mount, you know, underneath this, like along the front portion of your Tacoma seat was like the coolest thing ever. And like finding a flashlight mount on Amazon is like the biggest thing, you know, and everybody raves over that. But like having a flashlight that's actually usable is invaluable.
And the rechargeable element of it makes it kind of a bit of a difference maker there.
Yeah. You know, and like I have a 110 plug in the back of the Lexus. So I can theoretically just mount up some kind of thing and just plug the flashlight into that. So it charges every time I drive the truck, you know? But you know, it's like meaty and nice and slightly more complicated than I would say ideal in terms of changing which lighting output it delivers, because currently I can only figure out whether it's like, you know, full kill or strobe light.
Full kill.
you used to be able to do like medium or low light, and now I can only get it to do the two of what I just mentioned. But yeah, no, it's, I mean, you know, like there's certain companies out there where you expect a level of quality, and Pelican is like one of those, and you know, the flashlight is there. So
it's fantastic. I like
it's
it.
It's good for poking around outside when you think there's coyotes
or stray dogs
or cows, which,
is that an issue in Stanford?
No, in New Hampshire is that.
Oh, okay, yeah.
you got the flashlight going for, you know, scoping out whether there's coyotes in the yard of the place you're staying, the Airbnb that you're living in, or
yeah,
or whatnot, and you find out that there's cows, which are probably why there are also coyotes.
It made me think of my son sent me an Instagram reel the other day, and it was like a guy walking with his dog in the woods, and he thought his dog was like walking up to a bear. And it's this dark shape in the distance gets up and moves. It is the biggest
wolf. Oh my God, wolf. I saw that.
Right? That thing was enormous.
Dude, that thing's the size of a horse.
Yeah. It's like a dire wolf. Like it's a thing of mythology.
I saw that on Reddit, and most of the comments were like, "Is this? There's no way this is real." And
right. There's something going on there. Like
it could be perspective, or like, you know,
the guy's dog's an actual puppy and no one knows. Like he. Anyway,
yeah, no, that was terrifying.
Yeah, that thing, giant dog. So,
oh man,
do you want to talk about press vehicles? Where do you want to go next?
Yeah, let's run through the press cars, because it's a crew show. So I'm gonna literally read the list first, and then you can tell me based on the list exactly what you want to talk about.
I just start F-150 Lightning. I just want to know.
Okay, F-150. All right, so the F-150 Lightning. So I had a very, very blue F-150 Lightning that I spent a week with. I loaded a quad into the bed, which is, as far as I can tell, probably the first ATV that's been loaded into the bed, at least on the press side of things. Drove it as if it was daily and whatnot, and you know, used it with a car seat, you know, with baby in the back. It's good. It's really good. It drives like a normal truck. It functions like a normal truck. It's got a bed like a normal truck. I'd say it even goes further than that, because it's got, you know, the frunk, and it's got the charging, the 120, 110? Yeah, 110 up front.
110, 220.
110 and 220 under the frunk. And it's got a 110 in the cabin, and it's got both of them out back. It could not have cared less that I had 1,000 pounds of Polaris in the bed.
Really?
Yeah.
So you actually drove it around with the quad in the back for a little bit.
I returned the Polaris with this, and yeah. I used the Lightning to return the Polaris. And it didn't care, which is a lot more than I can say about a lot of the other vehicles that I have loaded the Polaris into the back of. The charging infrastructure remains a question. The only place, and to reiterate, I live in a city. The only place that I had in my available to me to recharge the vehicle was an Electrify America place. And I only used about half of the truck's charge, so I didn't recharge it, because baby got sick, and you know,
don't set an electrical charger with a sick kid. What are
you
doing?
Yeah, no, I didn't feel like just plugging it into my house. So no, I mean, it is a very good vehicle. You know, you can nitpick, like the thing is, it's an EV and it's a pickup, and the two of those, when you add them together, there are compromises. You know, the added weight compromises the ride quality. There's no way around it. You know, it compromises the braking, it compromises the way the thing comes to a rest. with 1,000 pounds in the back after you stop. You know, it, like, there's this little like rock back and forth shimmy kind of thing. But it has amazing tech. Like, it has onboard scales. It has like all these things you would never even think of. You know, you just have to know how to work them. Like, I tried to operate the onboard scales with the quad in the bed and realized that the only way you can operate the onboard scales to, which calculates how much mass you have in the vehicle versus the payload, is if you push the button prior and then after. Which, you know, is my
hey, you fault. Had to learn.
Yeah, it's my own fault. So no, the lighting's good. I'm very excited to see what comes next. You know, whether that's a Ranger EV or a Maverick EV. We know there's a Silverado and a GMC Sierra EV coming. There's a Ram Revolution. Is that what they're calling it?
Yeah, it's like it is Ram Revolution or something. But
every fucking EV has to have a pun in its
what
name.
Was the there's oh one that's not gonna be able to do it, and I couldn't remember which one.
Not gonna be able to do what the pun
oh the or... Suburban. If they ever if they do the Suburban EV, they there's no E in Suburban. No. So
Suburban
Eve Suburban even.
So no, the lighting is good. I think everybody that buys one will be satisfied with it, so long as they can actually maximize its charging ability. It's good. You know, it's really good for a first go.
I'm glad they exist. I've been around them. I haven't driven one, obviously. I really like the hybrid version. Like, I don't know why we need to go. Yeah, the
Power Boost.
Yeah, the Power Boost. The hybrid version. Like, but I can't get it with six seats. Like, I just need to put a front row bench in it, and I would.
Yeah, but you're daily talking the crap out of it. Premonitions here. You know, it's only a matter of time before there's a Power Boost Excursion and an Excursion EV.
You mean Expedition? They don't make the Excursions anymore.
Yeah, that's.
I wish they still made the Excursion.
that's what I meant.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's good.
Sweet.
On the extremely inefficient alternative side of things, the Escalade V is the greatest thing ever.
No, it's not.
It is. It is as silly gets.
It's all kinds of dumb.
It's all kinds of dumb. It's the supercharged V8 that is your children.
Yeah, it's the updated picture.
They fit in, they do fit in the Escalade V.
They do.
and but they I won't. Assure,
they'll I be averaged, in there for a long time, but we're not going very far with it.
Averaged 8.8 with it.
Yeah.
And I think with your kids in it, I'd probably average 8.7. So it doesn't care about anything. It is spectacular. It makes the best sounds of anything. It's 150 something grand for what? You know. Yeah, man.
Okay.
It's the Blackwing CT5V Blackwing engine.
I remember when we had Bowman and Kevin on and they talked about how they love driving the Escalade. And that one was 109, I believe.
Yes. This is the second Escalade I've had this year, and both of them have not been inexpensive.
Oh my gosh.
But this one, I mean, this one's like, if you want a CT5E Blackwing, but you want four-wheel drive and high seating position. And we had Johnny on a few weeks ago.
Right.
And he said that this is the loudest, most obnoxious vehicle on sale. And like, I mean, short of boutique, you know, like niche manufacturers, like I don't know how loud whatever the newest Pagani is would be.
I don't know,
but either. I have never personally experienced a factory vehicle that startup is louder than this.
It's so loud.
Like The only thing that I've started, and I've had a Corvette Grand Sport with a Corsa exhaust. I've had a Challenger with a straight pipe. I've, you know, tested multiple press cars that should be louder.
Right.
And this thing was so loud that I actually felt bad starting it in my neighborhood.
I feel like the engineers were like, nah, it doesn't matter. It's the last exhaust we're ever going to design. So just like do whatever the hell we want. Like
the engineers and the people on board on development were like, fuck it all. This is, we have like, dude, that the Jag F-Pace SVR was half as loud as this.
Okay.
Obnoxious, but also like it drove great. And like we had, when Robbie was on, we were like, he said something about the Escalade, you know, driving smaller and better than it has any right to. And like, it doesn't shrink around you or any of that trope bullshit that people say, you know, when they're driving Hellcats, but like, drives really good.
Nice.
Just have to, you know, have offshore accounts to afford fueling it.
Based on our time, I don't know that there's anything on the list here that I'm actually interested in, other than obviously you drove a BRZ Limited.
The BRZ was great. It is.
I don't know that we've discussed that you drove that.
So they gave me BRZ. It was silver with stick. Feels like ancient history because this was August.
This is 12 weeks ago. So 3 months ago.
Oh my God. So yeah. So this was only, my daughter was very young when this arrived. So I've owned Miatas and I've driven BRZs and FRSs and 86s and everything. And I like, as somebody grew up in Subaru fandom and as somebody who also has a fascination with going sideways and with like the interactions you have with the vehicle, which is kind of redundant saying that I've owned Miatas. I had like pretty high expectations for the BRZ. And it's really, really, really good.
Dude, I love the crap out of the one I was in.
Man, it is like, this is what the first one should have been. And I know that's so easy to say because I'm on the back side of things. You know, like I'm not involved in development or anything having to do with manufacturing of these cars. But it is like, it's just one of those cars that you're not going fast. You know you're not going fast. It doesn't matter that you're not going fast, but you can manipulate it in a way that always is like entertain. It's just,
yeah.
You go around a corner at 30 miles per hour when there's a sign that says like caution, don't go over 30, and you're like, oh my God, I was fucking flying. And it's just it's just good. Like the seats are good. The shifter is 95% of the way to where it needs to be perfect. Like the Civic Si shifter is better. There's no, I won't contest that. And I don't doubt that the Type R shifter is even better. But like, man, if you isolate any of the things that journalists harbor over out, it's not good, which is kind of fucked up. Like the steering is like a little too light, the shifter is a little too soft and not like direct enough, as people would say, you know, like it's mathematically kind of slow.
Right.
It should get better gas mileage for the weight and the power. It's sprung a little too soft, in my opinion, you know, and compared to a Miata, like it's sprung like a freaking race car because Miatas lean over on their bump stops like you know, like it's a freaking 70s like passenger sedan, but it's just the BRZ is just one of those cars that with all of the things that come together, it's just super cohesive. And it's just fun. It's just like,
I love the crap out of the time I spent in one. And it was the only, the only time I was around one was at Road America. It's the only vehicle I took multiple laps in.
Yeah. The fuck
I drove
up
a Lexus. I drove a Supra. I drove both Supras that were there, the 4 and the 6. The BRZ is the only one I went back to.
Oh, no. It's more car than the Supra will ever be at a half or a third of the price. But the fucked up thing is that dealers are charging 10 over for the BRZ and the 86. And that much money gets you a Mustang GT or, you know, an SS with potentially a 1LE. Package.
Find one of those that also isn't being charged over.
Yes, yeah. No, but I know for a fact you can place a factory order and get those cars at sticker.
Yeah.
And like that is, those cars are twice the horsepower. They're literally twice the horsepower, you know, at the tire. And
it's fantastic.
Regardless, like people wax up and down about like how the enthusiast car is dead, but like the BRZ, when in 20 years, people are going to look back on this BRZ the same way people look back on the AE86, you know? So it's good. It's really good.
I'm going to skip my updates, actually. I'm going to hold off on them. I don't want to talk about them.
Okay.
Because I just need to be more focused on them before. It'd just be a general discussion of, like, literally way too much. Like, I'd rather be a little more focused on them before we talk about it. So
you're in a bit of a transitory period, so
yeah. Well,
transition.
It's more of a transition, but
made it by my tongue before I say something.
Yeah, but I did pull up stuff from SEMA, which I always see people like, oh, I'm so excited to go, and all I can think about is like the 13 miles I walked in one day at SEMA. Like, yeah. I don't. Ever like I'm sure it's fun to see people like it would have been great to see people, but like that is such an epic day of just like wandering constantly. But speaking of Ford Lightnings, I don't know if you saw this coming out of SEMA.
I didn't, but what the fuck am I looking at?
So you're looking at a Ford Lightning that's been dropped. Obviously
this is the most Photoshop of Photoshop looking Photoshops.
Yeah, but I love the body color match Thule on top.
I do too, but I don't like the quad seating pseudo Recaros.
Yeah, that's weird. But then check out the bed Thule as well, which I'm assuming this is the tent. That's the cargo carrier.
Whose product is this? Because this is
I don't remember.
Okay, for the listener, Ford Lightning, obviously electric. Drops on presumably 22s
or bigger,
possibly 24s that match the rooftop Thule, and it is
with a cream. It's a green truck with cream wheels and a cream Thule on top.
It's Toyota's army green matched with a cream wheel and cream Thule.
It's not bad. The more I like it, I like it.
It's a way I personally, and there's a lightning. So the grill obviously has the lightning trim.
Yeah, it's not blank.
And then it just says lightning across the front in enlightened
LED style letters popping off.
$150,000 that I wouldn't spend doing this.
All right. Well, maybe this one's more your style.
It is.
So, for the listener, this is the Nissan. God, I can't even remember what number truck.
It's technically a Datsun.
Yes. But it's definitely a heritage truck, like
it's not
early
a five,
70s.
Is it a 510? I don't know if it's a
510. No, it's not a 510. They chopped and put a bed on the back. It's actually the truck.
It's long before mini trucks were even a thing.
Yeah, but it's on, got like, turbo fans.
It's got turbo fans. It's got the hood mounted fender mirrors, white with red accents. It's the way trucks should be.
It's the appropriate size too.
Small truck space. Yeah. Although fender those flares. Are very, very large wheels.
Yeah.
It would be the perfect extra if extras were a thing in Gymkhana.
Yeah.
Also, doesn't not look like the rotary Mazda's trucks.
What?
You know, Mazda made those rotary trucks. It kind of looks like that. Like
a little bit.
They don't not look like each other. And this is the proper use of possibly double negative.
Yes.
All right. Arsema saga continues.
This one at least is something we can talk about. So.
This is actually like we were joking about premonitions before, but like this is an actual premonition for what you will be able to walk into the dealer and buy probably in 18-ish months.
Pretty soon.
You think I'm wrong about that?
No, I think it'll be real.
I think a year is probably too close, but I think 2 years is. I think their marketing team and their development teams are probably lighting fires under people's asses to get this out sooner.
Yeah. So this is the Toyota Tundra Trail Hunter is the concept name.
Trail Hunter being the moniker that they're planning to use for their entire line of above TRD Pro.
They're going to charge us even more
rotors. I don't know. So the thing, the catch here is they haven't actually said what Trail Hunter is going to be. They've just announced that there's going to be a line of Toyota vehicles called Trail Hunter, which is a good name. A little campy considering Honda just announced Trail Sport, but like, Trail Hunter is an actually like that's an actual good name. And if it's, you know, like, God, next year is the 20th anniversary of the Rubicon name, and Jeep has sold probably hundreds of thousands of vehicle base just on the fact alone that the Rubicon name has drawn people into the dealership.
So, I feel like you're low with your number there.
You think Rubicon's actually drawn more?
I think they're sold millions of those things. So
I wouldn't be surprised if it was a couple of 100,000 vehicles, not just Wrangler Rubicons, but like that they've actually like, you know, the halo vehicle aspect has brought people into the dealership because they go, oh, I'm going to buy a Rubicon. And they get in there and they go, oh, actually, I'm going to buy a Cherokee. Ha ha ha. You know, so
yeah.
So the TRD Pro has been a long, like, winding road for Toyota. And its connotation kind of varies based on Tundra to Tacoma to 4Runner. And then they have like, you know, TRD Adventurer and TRD whatnot for RAV4. So yeah. Trail Hunter, if they like, this is a concept. They've accepted that this is a concept because it's got like this kooky rooftop tent thing going on.
Yep.
But if they go big and do like front and rear lockers, and like a little bit of underbody protection, I think Trail Hunter could actually like be a thing, you know?
There's
like,
a lot of space in those wheel wells.
There's a lot of space in those wheel wells, but like flex is a thing. And
right, flex is a thing. Or bigger tires. Dude, like they're planning ahead.
Yeah, but like this is also, this is them saying, we have a name, we are displaying a concept for this name.
Yeah.
We know for a fact that there's a new 4Runner in the next year to 2 years.
With probably a Tacoma to follow.
There will be a Tacoma to follow, and there will also be a Tacoma EV to follow, you know, and there's a new Lexus GX coming. So if there's a Tundra Trail Hunter that goes along with this. Like, they have their own Rubicon on their hands if they really nail things down the right way with what this needs to be. And you know, my somewhat educated opinion is rear locker, front locker, possibly electronically disconnectable front sway bars, some kind of underbody protection, and some kind of badging and or decal kit that makes this something more than just a TRD Pro.
Yeah.
You know?
I like I like the rock sliders it had on it. I thought those were good.
Yeah, I mean, if you buy a Wrangler or a Gladiator Rubicon, it has factory sliders, you know? Like, Toyota's theoretically just taking hints. But, I don't know.
So, what'd you get?
I was going to say, a 4Runner Trail Hunter with sliders, front and rear lockers.
They'll sell all of them.
Like electronically disconnectable sway bar. If it's $65,000, they'll sell all of them. It doesn't
I think if it's higher, they'll still sell all of them. 392s are how expensive in like the 70s?
392s? Oh yeah, you can't buy one for less than 70.
Yeah.
You're talking about 90 for one with good options, but like the thing is that most TRD Pro 4Runners are also selling for way over MSRP.
Right.
You know, and that truck has been around since 2000. Did you know that there was actually, you know, the sole engine option for the 4Runner, for the 5th gen 4Runner?
The 4-liter V6?
4-liter V6 paired to the 5-speed automatic?
Yeah.
Did you know that in 2010 and early in 2011, there was a 4-cylinder 5th gen 4Runner?
No.
There was.
And nobody wanted it.
They sold about 50 of them. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I think the total production numbers were like close to 200, but there was in fact a 4-cylinder 5th gen 4Runner.
For a while it messed with me that I didn't realize you could get a 4Runner in rear wheel drive.
Oh yeah, you can still. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sport like, rear wheel drive.
It's literally called 4Runner. Yep.
You can get a sport nightshade. I think at one point you could actually get like a TRD rear wheel drive, but yeah, no, there was SR5 rear wheel drives. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. There's
sweet.
Super the small last culture of ordering 4Runners. Yeah.
Last one I got is just one of pure insanity. So Gremlin.
I was expecting the XO.
No.
Sequoia.
I didn't go with things that were normal. Plus, we're hoping Kurt comes on the show soon. So I don't want to take that off. I want to talk about fair that enough with him. I want to talk about somebody who's actually got knowledge of it.
Yep,
this thing enough just is insane to me of a Gremlin on tracks. And I kind of like it.
So somebody posed a question recently about snowmobile trails. And if you have a vehicle that's on tracks, can you
drive on snowmobile trails?
Snowmobile trails. Like, what if you
have a narrow enough
side by side or a Gremlin and you put it on tracks? Can you snowmobile trails legally? The most offensive thing about the vehicle we're looking at, which for the listener is a red Gremlin with a roof rack, and I think those are actually air horns on the roof.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's like 7 yep air horns up top.
Yep, they are train horns, not lights.
And the front bumper looks like it came off a Wrangler.
That's what I was gonna say. It's a Stinger. It's a probably 18 to 24 inch Stinger bumper perched off the front. So the only thing I can guess is they're hoping they run into some kind of wildlife.
I don't know. I just thought it was fun to look at.
What the fuck does it say across the front of this thing? Just above the grill. Quake.
Quake. It looks like Quake LED.
Quake LED?
Yeah.
I don't see any LED lights on this thing other than what's just below the roof rack, which is just below the 100 million decibels of air horns.
Well, there's looks like there's one off either side of the roof rack as well.
Good. Oh, so, okay.
And then it looks like it's got rear, like those marine speakers on the back of
it. It does, in fact, have boat speakers.
Yeah. It's just this is my favorite part of SEMA, because you're like, what the fuck is going on? But at the same time, somebody went, I've got vision.
Yeah, it's backed up against a Ford F something that has a sticker on it that's just coming in hot, and it's parked alongside what
looks like a trophy truck.
Yeah, it's trophy. It's something that would race in the mid 400. It's on bidlocks and it's got net on the driver's window. Yeah. So,
yeah, all this stuff just gets parked outside at SEMA. It's fantastic.
Dave something. I can't read that.
Looks like Mason Jr. Dave Mason Jr.
Yep.
Dave, hit us up if you want to talk about your truck.
This is your sole SEMA Pinto here. But yeah, there were other SEMA things that we'll potentially touch on. But God, every year leading up to SEMA, I think to myself, God, I wish I was going to SEMA. And then SEMA comes. And I look at pictures and I look at videos and I go, shit. I am so glad I didn't go to SEMA.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I regretted not going to SEMA. I just realized it's just so.
Well, you could fund $500 million worth of unnecessary shit you could do to your Suburban.
Right. But that's, it's not even what it, it's not even what it is. Like, it's just, it's like a weird, look what I can do show. But half the time,
I don't want to say one-upsmanship is not the right phrase. And I'm weary of using a phrase that I would otherwise,
like a measuring contest, but
it is a phallic measuring contest. Yes. It is a sausage measuring contest
I'm gonna pivot us again with that metaphor into a different factory prep vehicle.
Okay.
Couple of them. First one being the Porsche.
Ooh, yes. All right. So they've been talking about this for a long time. And
since before Matt Farah had a Cayman on a boat that sank.
Yes.
Or Boxster on a boat that sank, sorry.
Since probably before Matt Farah had a Viking built Safari 911, they've been discussing doing a Safari, quote unquote, Safari 911, something on what is a quote unquote lifted suspension for longer travel.
They're up there.
Better ground clearance and comfort over the utter shit roads that are most of the world's. I think the idea is that Porsche has been looking back to their like Rothmans rally cars and also looking to the current market and say, and realizing that like Lee Keen is, you know, and all the printing other
money,
all the other companies that are, you know, selling these rally or Safari Porsches are effective. Yeah. Like you said, printing money. And rally is hot and off-road is hot and overlanding is hot. And that dude that put the RTT on the, you know.
Yeah.
Was it a
996?
996. Like they're missing out on a demographic that they would otherwise make a ton of money on. And it's not like they have to crash test a new 911 if they lift it, you know?
Dude, I love the Rothmans car. Sorry.
No. I mean, the in terms of like Porsche, like hierarchy, the Rothmans car is probably in the top five. So,
well, and then you get, so you not only do you have like, what were they, 964s? Then you had Rothman 959s. Like,
yeah, the Rothman 959 is like easy top five Porsches of all time, with up there with like, you know,
I wish my computer would get so much faster so I could share pictures.
I'm going to fuck up the nomenclature of these things so bad I'm not even going to say them. But like the 70s, 80s race cars, you know, the car Seinfeld ones. I'll leave it at that.
Then the 917s? The Le Mans cars?
Yeah, 917K and 917 something else.
I think this one's 964 base. I believe that's Walter Roll.
That is Walter Roll. I don't know if that's 964 base.
I think it is. It looks like a Singer, but it's lifted.
Is it 964 or 993? I am.
It's not 993. It's 964.
Yeah, I'm struggling with my Porsche.
We're getting very specific.
Oh,
tonight.
God. Somebody's going to punch me in the face here. So,
especially because our powers combined, we can't buy one. So,
I mean, we could buy one. It's not something that I'll be driving anytime in our lifetime.
We like 5 years ago, we could have afforded a 996, but even those prices have gone up now.
We should have. We should have bought a 993 or 964 or something. So, anyways. Porsche has decided and realized that there's a huge market for this. And also that thanks to people like, you know, prior guest Matt Farah, you don't have to sacrifice the dynamics of a 911 and the fun factor of those cars to have what is both better off-road capability and also, as it turns out, better U.S. city street comfort.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and they've been testing these things, too. Like, they've been putting them through the ringer.
But, like, the fucked up thing is that the road that you can see here, realistically, at speed, isn't going to feel that different from, like, downtown New York City or Chicago or L.A. You know, and
you haven't met Missouri roads yet. They're awful too.
Man, the infrastructure and local road quality has not kept up with the increase in traffic. And that's something we should probably have a show on. And speaking of TST, we should try to contact some of their prior guests to see if they'll do a show. Like Sleeka was one of the best shows I've listened to in a long time. But yeah, it's, you know, Porsche has realized that suspension travel is a good thing.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's not just Porsche.
It's also
getting a Lambo too.
It's Lamborghini and you corrected my friends. It's Sterato. And there will be a Porsche counterpart in the Huracan Sterato. I feel like I'm overpronunciating it and botching it in the process.
I said Sterato earlier, and you were like,
what? I said Sterato. So
right,
fuck me, you know. But
I'm not gonna roll the R.
Yeah, no, no. But it, like, you know, we're seeing the homologation cars, like in the GR Yaris and the GR Corolla. And we're getting kind of the short end of the stick on those because ultimately rally cars are meant to go over rough surfaces very fast. We're getting cars that are good at going over good surfaces very fast, but they're kind of shit at going over rough surfaces, you know, the production cars, whether it's Type R or the GR Corolla. As it turns out, to get something that's good at doing everything, you're going to have to spend a lot of money.
The photo I shared was the spy shot of it testing. This is what they're talking about production looking like.
It is a sinister Huracan. It looks like the current one, not the Trofeo.
It's the Huracan based. Oh,
yeah. The one that everybody was reviewing.
Technica.
Technica. So take a Technica. Lifted about an inch and a half to 2 inches, roof scoop, roof rails, which are
hilarious,
and they're explicitly for the fact that they want marketing to ultimately put a rooftop tent on there.
Yeah.
Two probably 6-inch LED lights across the front.
So if if you are planning to purchase one of these,
chaos,
I highly suggest contacting GoFast Campers. You want a rooftop tent that is low profile, that is actually made really well. Please give Graham and those guys a call. I want to see a platform on one of these.
The problem is those roof rails look so severely, like, that doesn't look flat at all.
No, they have a curve to them as well. So,
but yeah, I don't know, man. We're about to enter the freaking Wild West of factory built, you know, rally cars. And I really hope, like, there's always this thing about Formula One having a trickle down effect. And
yeah,
there is a genuine trickle down, like hybrids, you know, and aerodynamics does genuinely impact what we see in road cars 10 years later. So
real fast before we move on,
man, if these kind of things make it their way down to like, do you remember the Volkswagen Beetle? Was it called Baja?
I think it was called Baja. Dune.
Dune, yeah. And it had like a 0.6 inch lift.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine if that actually had 60 extra horsepower and 3 extra inches of lift?
All right.
I would have walked to the fucking dealer down here in Stanford and I would have given them a check.
I'm going shock value on this one, okay? Because I did not prep you for this at all.
I hope that's a render.
It is a render. So this is one of his wb.artist20 on Instagram. I love following his stuff. He does a great job with the renders. He was remember the Ram TRX Suburban recently that I showed you?
Yeah,
he did that render. So he did a Mustang Raptor, which after looking at the Porsche and the Lamborghini, why not? Why not have one of these? Mm-hmm. And they're so much fun to look at. They'd be hilarious. It's like they look like rally fighters, the local motors rally fighters.
They do look like rally fighters. Yeah. Yeah. Hi, Mike Levine. Yeah. Would you like this IP? Yeah, you would.
Yeah, exactly. It's available.
Do you remember probably 6-ish years ago, somebody, and I don't want to say like rallified, but like put like 30 inch tires on a Hellcat?
Ooh, I don't remember that one.
Oh boy.
I'll see what
please
I can
do. Hold.
Hellcat rally.
I found it.
Is it blue, like from Turner? Or Bilstein?
Search Rachel Scheuer. Scheyer. And I only found this because I searched and my own universe article came up from 2017. It was the quote unquote Mad Max car of the time. Speaking of Mad Max, if anybody listening has not seen Fury Road, stop listening to us and go watch Fury Road at least 30 times before you come back to listening to us, because Fury Road is probably the best movie made in my lifetime. Just saying.
Spell Scheuer again.
S-H-O-S-H-R. You know what? This is easier if I just send you the link in the chat.
Because it's not working right now.
And
my Google search is like, did you mean? No, I didn't. I meant what
all
I
right.
meant.
The message has been sent in the chat, and this will be our last topic of the night as I have things I have to.
Oh, I was close, I think.
Do, fortunately.
And it's a forum and is moving incredibly slow.
Yeah, it's all par. So it's glacial.
It looks like what she has done is basically just taken off-road KO2s on a much smaller wheel and put them on the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then been able to
give it
dominate on the front.
This is 5 years ago. And 5 years ago, the Hellcat was only about a year old.
Yeah.
So she figured out what the smallest wheel he could fit around the rear Hellcat brake was, and then slapped the KO2, the biggest KO2 that could fit in the wheel well, around that, and made, you know, internet. At the time, it was internet magic, because it's like, this is before, you know, Lee Keen had decided to Rallify 911s, you know.
It's so long ago, the image is only 500 pixels.
Yeah.
It is really small.
that is a small picture. That is a tiny little picture. But yeah, imagine a very muddy Challenger, current generation Challenger.
I think her initial wrap is like a faux Patina, like rust.
Yeah. It's before Patina was cool. It was like, and before like the pseudo bloody thing was funny for like Halloween.
Yeah.
And Walking Dead. You know, this was like pretty innovative, in all fairness. So
yeah, I like it.
I'm reading this Allbar article. She ran an 11.6 at 5,000 feet. It's pretty good. Stick car too.
Yeah, I finally I'm found
sorry
one that
for
has,
my yawns. I am.
I finally am. Found one that has the a little more. Yeah.
My yawns are.
You can definitely see the wheel diameter difference on this one.
Man, yeah, I mean, this is it's very Mad Max, which, I mean, yeah. Shit.
Well, you're just saying that because it's got louvers on the rear window.
Yeah, but it's also got the big tire out back. The thing is, like the small wheel, big tire in the rear, and big wheel, small tire up front. The Mad Max part of that is like the mentality of I will find what I have available to me, yep, and make it work kind of thing, you know?
Just like regular New Zealand.
Yes. And again, anybody that has not seen Fury Road,
it's a good one. I've rewatched it a number of times.
Man, it is my fucking favorite.
It's good. I like it. Well, sweet. Yeah. I'm going to wrap it up.
Crucial.
So, yeah. You can rate and review the show wherever you listen to it. You can like and subscribe on YouTube. You can follow Hooniverse, The Hooniverse on Twitter, The Real Hooniverse on Instagram. Ross is No Not Like the One from Friends. And I'm at Overlanding Dad. And that's it. That's our show. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.